Oh, man, what a great day to be here, guys. I am so excited to be with you guys. I hope you're excited to be here because, a couple of you are. That's awesome. The rest of you, you're kind of like, what's the big deal? I just showed up. Like, it's Sunday. Why are you guys so excited? And, hey, I totally get that. If you're new around here, or maybe today is your first day, it would be easy to kind of look around and think, what in the world is going on? Well, we're really excited. We're celebrating because we have been in this location for a year now, and we think that that's super important. We think that's a really big deal, and I'm actually really glad you are here today. In fact, if this is your first Sunday, I think it's a perfect Sunday to be here, and here's why. You're going to kind of get to hear a little bit about our story. You're going to get to hear about the impact some phenomenal people that you're sitting around have had over the last 12 months, and you're going to get a look at kind of where we're headed, what we dream for, kind of what we're hoping to be true in this community or, you know, for this community. So honestly, I think that you're going to get to peer behind the curtain and you're going to get to have all the information you need to know about whether or not this is the kind of church you want to be a part of. If you have a family, whether or not this is the kind of church you want to raise your family in. And I know I may be biased, but I think you're going to like what you hear. It's a pretty remarkable community. These are remarkable people that you're sitting around. So to kind of get us all on the same page and catch you up and so that we all kind of know what this story has been, let me take you back. You kind of rewind 12 months ago, we were not here. And then the previous 6 years before that. So the previous 6 years before that, so 7 years ago, we were what we call a portable church. It means that we didn't have a permanent location. We didn't have a place that was our own. Literally everything we owned, it lived in a road case on the back of a truck somewhere or in the back of a trailer, and then sometimes even in a storage unit. And so what would happen is every single Sunday when we would meet, a big group of people would show up. They would work for hours and hours and hours to get everything set up. We started at a high school, and then eventually we moved to a conference center, to a ballroom. And in both locations, people would work literally all day to get everything ready for 1 hour, sometimes 2 hours worth of services. We would have our services, and we'd pack everything back up, put it all back in the road cases, take the road cases back to the trucks, put everything back on the trucks, send it back to the storage units. And then we would rest all week long. No, we actually had real jobs all week long. We didn't get to rest. But we would do all of that so that we could do it again the next week. And it was a ton of work, but it was so worth it. Because from the very beginning, our hope was, our dream was that we could create a different kind of church. We kind of looked at our community. We said, there's a lot of churches, feel like there's a lot of, you know, options, but we just feel like that we need a church in our community where people love to attend. And we were crazy enough to think that we could create a church that people who didn't even like church would like to attend. And so even though it was a ton of work, it was worth it. And not only did people attend, they started showing up like crazy. The harder you worked, the better environments you created, more and more people showed up. Every time we would move to a better location, more people would show up. And we eventually kind of looked at everything and we said, man, if we could take all this energy that we're having to put into creating environments, that we're having to put into being portable, if we could take all of that energy and pour it into our community, if we could find a place of our own so that we could refocus all this effort on our community, think of the difference that we could make. So about a year and a half ago, through some really, really cool circumstances that would take me, honestly, multiple days to tell you the whole story, but through some really cool circumstances, the opportunity to move into this location became available. And so I came over here, I looked at it, it looked nothing like what it looks like now, walked around, and I said, there's no way we can do that. That's crazy. It cannot happen. And then we set up one more week, and it was really hard, and I came back, and I said, okay, let me take a look at it. So it looked a lot better the second time. Like, I think we can maybe do it. Let me get a second opinion. So I brought somebody with me. I said, you got to see this place. I think we can do it. They went, we can't do that. There's no way we can do it. I said, come back for the second time. The second time, it looks way better. They came back a second time and they loved it. They're like, we can do it. And this happened over and over again until finally we convinced our whole team. And so then I came back to you guys and I said, I've got a crazy idea. I'm not going to show it to you because you won't believe me.
But I've got a crazy idea. We can take an old space that's underutilized and we can turn it into something remarkable. We can turn it into a space where people love to attend. But it's going to take a lot of money. And I personally don't have a lot of money. So can you help me raise a whole bunch of money? In fact, I think we need to raise about $1 million. And I think we need to do it in less than a year. And because we're partnered with this really great network of churches in Atlanta and they could help us with some cost, I felt like that if we could raise $1 million and we could do something extraordinary in this space. And so I asked you guys to be bold and to do some incredible things and to be generous. And you blew me away. You didn't give $1 million so we could move into this space. In just over 12 months, you guys gave over $1.4 million so that we could be here. Which is remarkable to think about. But then we had another problem. Remember, every time we changed locations and every time things got better, more people would show up. And I went, wait a minute, there's gonna be a whole lot of people that show up if we do this right, and we don't have enough volunteers. And so I came back to you guys and I said, I need you to give up something more precious than your money. I need you to give up your time. I need you guys to serve and I need you guys to help us create some extraordinary environments. And man, did you guys show up and wow, did you guys serve. In fact, over 600 of you stepped up to become new volunteers to serve in one of our Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon environments. And it was remarkable. And they showed up. And a lot of them showed up. And we don't know where they all came from, but a lot of people showed up. In fact, in the last 12 months, over 2,000 people have walked through these doors for the first time and have visited here for the first time to see what you guys won't stop talking about, to see what you guys are so excited about. And people who thought they would never show up in church before all of a sudden showed up. And then they did something crazy. They invited their friends to show up and more people showed up. And they wouldn't go home. They kept showing up and more people found out about this place and it was remarkable. In fact, not only did over 2,000 people show up, but we grew by over 30% in average attendance on a Sunday morning in this space because of what you guys were doing. And I know this is like the world I live in and this is kind of my business and this feels like a really big deal to me. And I imagine if I were to go to your place of work and you showed me a number, I would probably yawn and think, what's the big deal? Here's the big deal, and this is incredible. I hope you can understand this. We live in an age when people are walking away from the church faster than ever. We live in an age when churches all over the world are declining and unfortunately shutting their doors. And over the last 12 months, while that's happening more than ever, over 2,000 people came to see what you guys have created, and we grew by 30% in a season when people are walking away from the church faster than ever. That's remarkable, and you guys did that. You gave so that could be possible. You served so that could be possible. It's unbelievable, but it's not even the best thing. The thing that I love the most is that while we were growing this much, people were taking incredible steps of faith. In fact, 61 people over the last 12 months followed Jesus in baptism and went public with their faith. Over 40 of these happened on one day. We stood on this stage and I challenged some of you to take some big, bold steps of faith and to follow Jesus in baptism. And we had a spontaneous baptism and you guys didn't show up ready for it, but you responded and over 40 people went public with their faith. And we saw student after student and teenager after teenager and adult give their life to Jesus. And we watched as life change began to happen in this community. And that's just what happened in the building. Remember, we didn't do all of this just so things would stay in this building and just so things would be extraordinary in this room or in these hallways. We wanted to make a difference in this community. Our whole desire was that maybe, just maybe, our community could be better because we're here. And you guys, I think it is. I think you are doing some extraordinary things. In fact, as part of our annual giving and serving campaign that we call Be Rich, last year you partnered with all of our other churches and you guys gave over $7.8 million to be given away I mean, think about that. Almost $8 million came into our organization and it turned around and went right back out into our communities to feed these nonprofits, to foster what they're doing, to help them go further, faster. You guys did some unbelievable things and you didn't just give money. Again, you guys got behind this and you gave your time. In fact, 520 of you showed up through what we call Decatur City Serves and you served with some nonprofits in our community. You took a Saturday. You set aside a whole day and you served for hours with some incredible, incredible organizations to help them finish some projects that they never would have been able to finish. And it's unreal. It's unbelievable to think about what has happened and the impact you have already had in this city. And then I think it's just year one. Like, we're just getting started. The best really is yet to come. I believe there is so much opportunity, so many ways for us to pour into this community and help our community be even better than it already is. And as much fun as it is to think about what we've done, as much fun as to think about how far we've come, and honestly, as necessary as it is to look behind us, I hope when we look behind us, it only reminds us of what's still ahead of us and that it only reminds us of why we started. Because never, ever forget, the whole reason we began is because we looked at this community that so many of us love. We looked at this city and we said, 70% of the people who call this their home don't have a church home. 70% of the people who live here are not going to church, and it's not because they can't find one. They drive past hundreds of them. It's because they haven't found a church that's for them. And we looked at that problem and we said, somebody should do something about that. Somebody should solve that problem. And if you've ever said that, you know that usually that means you're volunteering to solve the problem. And I feel like that's what we did, is we just kind of volunteered ourselves. And we said, okay, we'll do that. We will try to create a church that is for everybody, a church where everybody can understand how incredible God is, how much he loves them, how much he is for them, that he is not mad at anybody. He is not against anybody. He actually has done everything possible so that everybody could have a relationship with him. And that's why we look back. That's why we celebrate, to remember why we started, because that's why we did all of this. Because when we look at the pages of the New Testament, and we read about the life of Jesus, we don't read about a God who's mad. We don't read about a God who is against people. We don't read about this God who is angry or wants to harm people. We read about a God who is for people. We read about a God that when he shows up in a community, that community gets better. Schools get better. Lives are better. Relationships are better. And we just think that if that's what God is like, then that's what his church should be like as well. And we just think that if God wants better for people, then the church should want better for people. And we just think that if people are better when they understand that God loves them, that people should be better when they understand that the church loves them as well. But you know this. Unfortunately, that's not the case, right? Unfortunately, in fact, far too often, people don't think of the church as making things better. In fact, a lot of people today would tell you that the church makes things worse. And they're not so sure that God is actually better or that God is actually for them. And sadly, if you were to rewind and think about history and kind of go all the way back throughout history, you would find that this is a problem that has plagued the church since the very beginning. In fact, this morning, I want us to go all the way back to about 64, maybe 65 years after Jesus died on the cross and rose from the grave. He started this movement that we know of today as the church, and he gave it a purpose and a mission and a focus, but yet just 64, maybe 65 years later, it's already getting messed up. It's already looking kind of ugly, and people are already trying to decide if maybe what we know of today is the old covenant, or the Old Testament, or the old agreement that God had with people. Maybe that was better. Maybe this new thing that God's working on, this new thing called the church, maybe it's not actually better. And so this morning, I want us to look at a letter in our New Testament that we know only by one name. It's Hebrews. We actually don't know a lot about this letter. It's something that's always fascinated me. The letter was written by somebody completely anonymous. We have no idea who wrote it. It could have been anybody. Scholars love to debate it. I personally think that the reason we don't know who wrote this letter is because, as you're about to see, so much of what they wrote was pretty scandalous, especially for the time. It was definitely hard to hear, and it probably would have gotten this person in a lot of trouble, maybe even cost them their life. And so it was probably just easier to write the letter in anonymity. But like, other than the mystery kind of surrounding this letter, there's a lot of things to be fascinated by when you think about the book of Hebrews. If you've ever read it, you understand it's really complex. It's really rich. It reads more like a rambling sermon or kind of like poetry. It certainly doesn't read like a letter. In fact, it's kind of hard to follow this author. The thoughts are so complex. They're so well developed. But this author is writing to this audience. And the author wants the audience to know that you should stay the course. You should not turn away from following Jesus. Jesus is better than the old relationship or the old agreement or the old covenant that God had with the nation of Israel. You should not give up, no matter what you face, no matter how hard this feels. You should stay the course. And so this author writes these super detailed arguments that are easy to get lost in. But one thing is easy to pick up on. If you do make it all the way through the entire letter, you pick up on this idea that the author is convinced. And ultimately, the author wants the reader to be convinced and wants you and I to be convinced that Jesus is, in fact, better. In fact, he is so much better than the old covenant. He is better than the old covenant in so many ways. The letter starts off with this detailed argument of why Jesus was better than Moses. Jesus was far superior, the author would say, than even Moses, who the people felt like was the founder of their faith. Remember, Moses was the one whom God spoke the law to. Moses was the one whom God spoke to, and then Moses would speak on God's behalf to the people. And the author says, throw all of that away. Jesus is better than that. In fact, Jesus isn't just better than Moses. Jesus is better than your high priest, which would have gotten this author in a ton of trouble because the high priest was kind of the center of the entire religious system that they had built. The high priest was the only person who could enter the temple, which is where they felt like God resided. And the high priest would go in on behalf of the people and intercede for the people. The high priest would make sacrifices for the people. The high priest would tell the people when they were right with God and if they could ever be right with God. And without the high priest, they could not communicate with God. And the author says, throw all that away. You don't need a high priest anymore. In fact, the high priest is not who you think it is. The high priest is not representing you. Get rid of that. In fact, the high priest's sacrifice are nowhere near as good as Jesus' sacrifice. You see, every day the people would show up at the temple. Every day they would have to make sacrifices. Every day they would have to petition the priest to make sacrifices on their behalf. And we're not just talking like say a few words and things will be all right. I mean, they would kill animals. They would burn animals. They would slaughter things. There was blood everywhere. It was gross. It was nasty. It was disgusting. And right at the center was this person who kind of controlled it all. And so much of that system that this author is saying you can get rid of, you can throw away with, so much of that system has gotten carried over and carried over. In fact, many of you maybe grew up in a system where you felt like there was a priest or a pastor who just kind of controlled everything and kept you under their thumb or told you all the rules you had to follow but never told you about God and what he was really like. And Jesus, or the author of Hebrews, says, throw that away. God wants to do something better. He has a new agreement, a new arrangement. He's ushered in a new covenant with you. And then right in the middle of Hebrews, as this argument kind of reaches its climax, right in the middle, there's this fantastic passage in the middle of chapter 8 that kind of wraps all of this up for us in one really bold statement that kind of brings all of this home and kind of really drives home why Jesus is better. The author says this. He says, here's the main point. If you've fallen asleep, if you've missed everything I've written for 8 chapters, here's the main point. We have a high priest, this is Jesus, who sat down in the place of honor beside the throne of the majestic God in heaven. Jesus is so great, he is actually seated next to God. The high priest never could have sat down. The high priest's work was never over. Jesus' work is finished. He is seated next to God. He goes on, there he ministers in the heavenly tabernacle, the true place of worship that was built by the Lord and not by human hands. Again, the author is just trashing the temple right here. Hey, you think that this temple that was built by human hands is the real temple? Jesus is in the real temple. Jesus is seated in the real temple with God, the true place of worship. You don't need the temple anymore. But now Jesus, our high priest, has been given a ministry that is far superior to the old priesthood. For he is the one who mediates for us a far better covenant, a covenant with God that is based on better promises. Plain and simple. Here's the point. Jesus is better. Jesus is better, and he's worth pursuing, and you shouldn't turn back, and you shouldn't mess this up. You should keep this your focus. This is the focus of the church, to carry this message. Jesus is better, and here's why. The author would go on and say that Jesus introduces us to this covenant or this agreement with God, that moving forward, we could have something we would never have under the old covenant. We could have a relationship with God. In fact, God wanted to know us personally and intimately, and help us be better at life, and help life be better for us, and that we could have all of that through Jesus. And the reason we could have all of that, the author would say, is that Jesus brought us better promises. He changed the covenant. He brought in a new agreement, and this new covenant was based on promises that would be so much better than the old promises. And if you were to continue reading the book, you would find that the author talks about these promises. And the first promise that they talk about is this idea of this promise of grace. You see, the old covenant was all about what we must do for God. Right at the center was us. It was all about us, and the focus was on our behavior. And it wasn't about grace. There wasn't a room for grace. There was no place for grace. It was about following the rules. It was about regulations, and we had to do right in order to be right. And if we didn't do right, we could never, ever, ever be right. And then whatever we incurred when we were not right was just, because there was no room for grace. The old covenant was all what we must do for God, but Jesus showed up and he introduced us to a new covenant, a new agreement. And if the old was what we must do for God, the new is what God has done for us. And all of a sudden, the center changed and the focus shifted to God, and all of a sudden grace became available. Because the standard didn't go away. God just met the standard. God said, I know you can't live up. I know you can't ever do enough to be right, so I'll do it all for you. I will show you my grace. I will show you my mercy, and I will send my son for you. And all of a sudden grace entered the scene. But another promise the author would speak of, a different promise became available as well. Not just grace, but all of a sudden inner change. All of a sudden true change, change on the inside became possible. You see, the old covenant was all about corrected behavior. If you know much about the Old Testament, you know that basically the old covenant was a series of laws written into stone tablets. And the entire law was designed to modify behavior. It was designed to just simply let you know when you messed up and how to correct that behavior. But there was no way you could actually change. There was no way you could be free from the habits that caused that behavior. You just got punished for the behavior. It just corrected the behavior. You know this. True change. Like lasting change. Change where we really feel freedom. That comes from the inside. And if the old covenant was about corrected behavior, the new covenant changes hearts. And I know this is kind of hard for us to get our minds around, but when Jesus died, he said that he would send us a helper that would be far better than him staying here. He said he would send the Spirit of God to live within us. So for those who follow Jesus, literally the Spirit of God resides in our hearts. Literally, we can have the mind of Christ. Paul would go on to say later in the New Testament that we could become new creations. We could have a new nature. We could become new people. And yes, our behavior would change, but our behavior would change because our heart would change. And all of a sudden, we could find freedom from the habits that hold us back. All of a sudden, we could be released from the bondage of addiction. All of a sudden, we could be new people because we could have a changed heart. We could experience grace we could experience true inner change. And he speaks of this promise later, of the promise of forgiveness. You see, the old covenant, what it did is it just highlighted our separation from God. The old covenant was really good at drawing like a bullseye or a target, if you will. And the old covenant would say, this is the standard you have to hit. And oh, by the way, it's an impossible standard, but you still have to hit it. You have to hit this standard to be good with God. And then when we would miss, we would be separated from God. And that separation would keep us from God. And there's a word for that separation. It's a word we don't like. The word is sin. And the reason we don't like it is because the church has hijacked that word, and we've kind of weaponized that word, and we've used that word to hurt people. But sin was just an old archery word that simply meant to miss the mark. And see, the old covenant would say, yep, you missed it. You sinned. You are separated from God. I don't know what you're going to do about it, but you missed it, and you have a problem. And God looked at that, and God said, I can solve that problem. If the old covenant highlighted our separation from God, the new covenant removes our separation from God. You see, God sent the solution for our sin, our separation. He said, I won't remove the standard. The same standard applies, but I can solve the separation. I can get rid of that gap between you and me. I can fill that gap with forgiveness. I can fill that gap with my sacrifice, with my high priest. I can fill that gap with Jesus, whom is better than anything you've ever experienced before, because he brings not only grace, he brings not only change, but he brings the opportunity to experience freedom through forgiveness. And then probably the best part, the part that drives us as a church, is the author of Hebrews wraps up this entire discourse in this letter that they have been writing. And the author says, not only is there grace, and not only is there forgiveness, and not only is there change possible, but the promise, oh, the promise, it's for everyone, by the way. It's for all people. You see, the old covenant, it just kept people out. The old covenant was a relationship that God had with the nation. It was a relationship that God had with Israel. And there were Jews, and then there was everybody else. There were Jews, and then there were Gentiles. And if you were a Gentile, if you were in the everybody else, you were out. The old covenant wasn't designed to get you in. And that means you and I, we would have been out. Unless you grew up Jewish, we would be out, because the old covenant was designed to keep people out. There was no intention of letting people in. But Jesus showed up, and God sent his son and said, I'm not going to let that be. I'm going to change that. And Jesus brought a new agreement that said, no. Let's let people in. The new covenant lets people in. And God looked into our lives and looked into the future and said, I want to create a place for everybody. I want to make sure that everybody can belong. And so God did something so amazing that it's kind of hard for us to get our minds around. He broke down this wall between people, this wall of hostility, other authors in the New Testament would say. He broke down this wall between Jews and Gentiles. And he said, no longer do I want there to be the in and the out, the have and the have not. No longer is there male and female, black and white, slave and free. No. I just want two groups of people to become one group of people. And I'm gonna call this one group of people my body. And my body's gonna be called the church. And the church is gonna have a mission. And the church is not gonna be a place. The church is gonna be a people. And the church is gonna be a movement. And the church is gonna be designed to make sure that my promises are carried to all people, because they are for all people. The church is gonna be designed to carry the good news that brings great joy of peace to all people. And that's why we're here. That's why we get so excited about the impact we've had over the last 12 months. That's why we get so excited about the opportunity for the future, because our whole mission, our whole focus is to bring good news to this community. Good news that all of these promises are not just for insiders. These promises are for everybody. These promises are for all people, because we're just convinced that either Jesus is better for all people, or he's not better at all. Either Jesus is better for all people, or all people still have a problem. And if he's not better for all people, then he's actually not better than the old covenant. He's not better than the old agreement. And so if we really, really, really believe that Jesus is better than all these things, if we really believe he's better than Moses and the high priest and the temple, and that he brings these better promises, if we believe there is a new agreement and a new covenant based on new promises, then that means it has to be better for all people. And if Jesus is better for all people, then shouldn't the church be better for all people? If Jesus is better for all people, if his agreement and his covenant with people is better, then shouldn't communities be better because the church is there? Shouldn't the church be better for all people? And that's why we started. Not so we didn't have to be portable anymore. Not so that we could have better environments or better experiences or have a really cool room like this or have a great building on a corner to point to. No. The whole reason we started is because we really believe that Jesus is better for all people, and we really believe that since he is, the church should be better for all people. And we want every single person in this community to have the opportunity to understand how remarkable Jesus really is and how spectacular God is and how incredible it is what God has done for everybody, because he loves everybody. And the thing I love about you is that you do this so well. That's why so many of you give here on a weekly basis. That's why you are so generous with your finances. You are generous in ways that it blows my mind. It's why so many of you serve and you create unbelievable environments. It's why I watch in horror a lot of Sundays as some of you will get on a stage in Upstreet or Wombaland and make a fool of yourself so that kids can understand how awesome God is. You do crazy stuff so that people can understand how awesome he is. It's why so many of you cram up on this third floor in what we call the attic, and you huddle up in rooms that are way too tight and way too small and filled with way too many middle schoolers. It's not because you don't have anything better to do. It's because you love Jesus and you want those middle schoolers to understand that they are loved by him. In about an hour, three buses of leaders and high school students are gonna pull back on to this campus. They've been away at a camp that we call Vertical Reality. And not a one of those adults is there because they don't have something better to do this weekend. Not a one of them is taking tomorrow off. They have real jobs and real lives. They're gonna be right back at work, but they're there because they believe that God cares about high school students and that God wants better for those students, and he can make their life better. And you do this so well. And I don't think we've lost it. I don't think we're losing it. This isn't like a, come on, let's get back on the same page. But this is me saying, I think we're set up to lose it. I mean, we're full. This room is full today. There's people parking in offsite lots. Some of you rode shuttles to get here. Our parking lot's crowded. The hallways are kind of packed. The bathroom situation isn't great. But like, it would be really easy for us to say, this is enough, right? But it's not enough. It's not why we started. We didn't start so that we could have a better experience. We started so that people all over this community could understand that Jesus is better for all, and he makes things better for all. And I just believe from the bottom of my heart that when we commit to being that kind of community, when we commit to sharing that kind of focus, when we commit to locking our arms together and making that our sole vision and mission and purpose for being, I'm convinced you have no idea what could happen in this city. I'm convinced that one day we'll look up and one life will be changed. And they won't be able to keep quiet about how incredible Jesus is. And they'll start talking about Jesus, and they'll start talking about the church, and they'll tell somebody else and their life will be changed. And then that person won't be able to stop talking about it either, and they'll tell somebody else and then their life will be changed. And then all of a sudden, somebody's life will be changed who never thought it was possible. Some addiction will be broken. Some relationship will be restored. Somebody will be healed in a way that they never imagined possible. Somebody will show up here who never, ever, ever thought they could darken in the door of a church. And then all of a sudden, addictions are broken, relationships are restored, people are renewed, and you just have no idea what could happen. And I believe we'll look up and this community will be better because we're here. But more importantly, I believe we'll look up and we'll realize this community is better because of Jesus. And we'll realize that we got to just be a small, small part of making a really cool introduction that forever changes people's lives.